You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye the Movie Guy, and this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, it's time to get serious about film with our fall movie preview.
I am looking forward to the fall. There's some great movies coming out, man.
I was about to say, finally, we're done with the superhero films, but they just don't end, Matt.
No, they don't.
And I'm sure you're probably going to highlight one on your top five films you're looking forward to this fall.
Indubitably.
I can't get away from these guys.
Nope. So just pretty much year-round now, right?
I agree.
You got to give yourself over to the dark side.
I remember a time when they were restricted between Memorial Day and Labor Day, but now it's year-round.
Yeah, because everybody like sat up and realized these things are freaking cool. Let's have more.
Oh, boy. So we are covering our top five favorite fall films. We also have a guest joining us, Frank Zitti, who has a web series coming out, Black.
Yeah, it looks... It's like military, action... And seriously high quality stuff. This guy is a go-getter. He's really doing something out there, which is it's a very impressive project, and we're happy to have him on the show.
Sure. I think the first we'll ask him when he gets here, but the first series, the first episode is out online, but I believe it's a 6-part series.
Yep.
We'll ask him all about it when he gets here. Also, we have theater reviews of Jobs.
Yep.
And also a second take on Elysium. I missed it last week when you caught it, Matt. I have such a different opinion about the film that I had to bring a second opinion.
Okay, I think my review was mainly positive.
I know.
So, okay, this is going to be good.
All right. Then our top five favorite fall films, plus yourself versus Frank. In honor of the new film Getaway, starring Ethan Hawke, you will be playing Ethan Hawke movie trivia.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Plus, not only that, and we got a good judge, too, that's going to be judging this cinema war. A cinema war looking at should Hollywood successful people such as... Zach Braff,
Spike Lee.
Mm-hmm. Should they be using Kickstarter or not? So we're going to go to war on that as well.
And I have a review, a DVD review of Machete.
Ooh.
Since Machete Kills is coming out this October, it's a fall movie. I thought it was fitting to go ahead and throw that review in right now.
Great. I saw that as well. Awesome. Jam-packed jaw, as always, Matt.
Yeah, indeed. Let's get to it.
So without further ado, we bring in our guest. His name is Frank Zitti. He has a new web series coming out, Black. Frank, welcome to Cinema Jaw.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the title Black obviously kind of refers to Black Ops, right? Mm-hmm. These guys are deep undercover. Give us the elevator pitch of the series.
Yeah, so it's a web series. You can find us at www.blackthewebseries.com. And the concept is that a government group is basically, a team is formed when there is a direct attack against the CIA on American soil. So... The existing CIA realizes that they need a group that's completely off the books, that has the capability to work outside the lines. And I think as you've seen now more in current politics and things that are going on, there's things that we as the general public aren't really privy to. So
sure.
That's kind of what this is about, that this team is pulled together, and it's led up by this lead character named Carnahan, who's played by Mikel Vega. It's high action. We sort of took the ideas of active valor, 24, the hit series on Fox, and
sure.
The Call of Duty Modern Warfare action franchise on you know, console gaming that has just blown away the record books when it comes to their fan base.
Yeah.
So that's what it's about. It's high action at the same time, drama, and military realism. We wanted to make sure as best we could with the budget that we had, that we had real-life operators who knew what they were doing with the weapon, the way it needed to be done, and we like what we've got.
Now, a concept like this, the idea, the story, where did it stem from? Did you create this, the idea? Did you come up with this?
Yeah, so I'm the series creator, writer, director. Our producer is John Phillips. And then we've got a long list of people who are highly dedicated, working for, you know, very little or next to nothing or nothing. And they're all guys that I've either worked with and girls on the film side, production, you know, in different states at different times, and I just sort of rallied the troops and said, here's the idea, do you want to go with it? But I'm a movie junkie, I think, like you guys. I mean, I watch a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And I kind of realized early on as a filmmaker that one of the best strengths you can have as a filmmaker is to know your genre, know what you want to be. There's nothing worse than when somebody comes out with a film and it's great in that genre, and then they try and completely change the next film, and you as the audience are like, wait a minute, I went into this film sort of looking for that. And sometimes it works. Sometimes there are great directors and writers who can change up and have different skill sets, But then there are other people you're like, just stick with what you know, man. Do what you do well.
Yeah, and keep making those Transformers movies, Michael Bay.
You know, I mean, it's so funny you say that. I've always felt that Bay would have been, and maybe still would be, perfect to make a true-to-form military film. Not some film based in, you know, we're going to deal with the, you know, these teams and these aliens and all these different things. Like, I'm talking, like, if there was a documentary about SEALs, who better to make it than him? You know what I mean? And with all that access, where the government's literally willing to give him aircraft carriers and all those things.
Yeah, that's true.
Why is he trying to always add comedy and all those things? If he took it serious, like the new one out here, Lone Survivor, with Wahlberg and all these other people, mm-hmm. I thought Bay would have been a great fit for that script, because he could have given it the real world action that everybody wants to see.
And that brings me actually to a question about the series Black. Yep. Because it deals so much with military and this, you know, covert operation that's looking at who's attacking the CIA.
Sure.
What kind of background did you have in researching that? Because, like, you see the trailer, I've watched it online, and it's very impressive stuff. I mean, the people who are involved in the project obviously know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Did you know some of these people that were involved with the military, or?
Well, there's two things I feel like I try to really do as best I can. Number one is research. So I am I hate to say it, I'm a Michael Mann groupie. So I literally watch everything he wants. And I thought one of the greatest things he's ever done as a filmmaker is his research.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Heat's my favorite film of all time.
Oh, that's a great movie.
You go back and you watch the making of and the commentary, and that's all based on real criminals that he knew for years. He had to change, you know, some of the elements of the story because it was so true to form. So I feel like I research as much as I can. And the other thing is I try to network as much as I can and shake as many hands and get to meet as many people and find out what are they doing and what am I doing and how can we sort of cross paths. So the first thing I did was went after real active military or, you know, post-military personnel, mm-hmm. meaning no longer serving. And our lead guy, Mikhail Vega, is a 22-year Navy SEAL veteran. He does, you know, EOD tech. He was in the military for a long time. And he got out and he just realized that acting was his first love when he was a kid. So with all that military training, he's now bringing that into his performances. And when you watch the series, it's really going to shine. You're never going to have any doubt that that guy is the real deal.
And he was also in Active Valor or no?
No, he was in Transformers 3.
Transformers 3, okay.
Had a couple lines in that, and he was right there in the same sequences with, I'm trying to think of all the actors, Tyrese Gibson, you know, Shia. He was in those sequences, and if you go back, he's got a thick mustache and a bald head, uh-huh. and he looks totally different. he's working right now on Transformers 4. I can't say much about it, but he's shooting some great footage there, and I think that they're really excited, and I don't know much about it, but he's going to be coming up on this new TNT series, The Last Ship, which will be this new sort of high action series. He was in G.I. Joe Retaliation with a small scene there. So he just keeps plugging away.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got, you know, an Army Ranger who's in the Army Ranger Hall of Fame. We've got a Marine Recon Sniper.
It's the real deal.
Yeah. And no, I mean, we still have some people who know nothing about guns and uh-huh. are just great actors, you know, to add to it. But the more we can bring in the legitimate military personnel, at least with some experience, I think it makes the project better.
Sure. And we were mentioning right before we started this interview about how many parts in the web series season one it is. And I understand it's 6.
Yeah, so
And how long is each one, roughly?
Yeah, it's going to vary. I mean, some of them will be over 5 minutes. Some of them will be 2.5 minutes. By going through the editing process in post, we saw sometimes where we had just extraneous stuff. You know what I mean? We were like,
yeah,
let's cut it so that it works. And we're like, okay, great. It doesn't drag. Yeah, it's half the time of the other episodes, but I'm sorry. We don't need to do more than that. Less is more. And in this situation, it's what worked. So 6 episodes total because it's 6 scripts. And we patterned it that way so that we had three parts, as you know, that old phrase, have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And then in between each one of, from episode 1 to 2, there's a high point. And uh-huh. Come back down, high point, come back down. So we try to engage people from part 1 to part 2 to part 3 and bring them through the full story.
Yeah, it looks absolutely awesome. I can't wait to see the whole thing.
Thanks.
It does. We're going to have a cinema war about crowdfunding and stuff like this.
Yeah.
But a lot of our listeners are probably either filmmakers or aspiring filmmakers. And forgive me if this is too personal. You don't have
Not
to answer
all.
It, but I'm curious, like, when I saw the footage, obviously the thing that jumps out at you is production value. This thing looks like, you know, $1 million movie. How did you get the funding to make this happen?
Well, we did do a Kickstarter, and our goal was $7,500. We raised about $11,000, and every cent of that has been long spent and gone. A lot of people dedicating their time and efforts and energy. And then we've got even some other backers that are still, that have helped us before, still coming forward and giving us money, but nothing in the, you know, $50,000, $60,000 range. But again, one of the things I've tried to be great at is network, and you would be shocked when you come with a great story, you come with some real actors who have somewhat of a clout like Mikhail does, and you go to people and you say, here's what we want to do. Do you want to be a part of this? They'll be like, yeah, I want to be a part of it. And by the way, my uncle owns a warehouse, or, you know, my friend runs an airfield, or, you know, we've got access to this building. And I mean, one of the best scenes we've shot in this is at a church in Gary, Indiana, which is
beautiful Gary, Indiana.
Yeah. I mean,
parts of it anyway.
Well, I mean, and it's been used heavily, and I heard about it because of Transformers Dark of the Moon. They were over there shooting nonstop. So we found this, and I can't tell you, they were like, yeah, oh yeah, it's a couple $100 for the permit. You can be there all day. No problem. You never really know once you get the ball rolling how amazing it is when people will just, resources will come your way.
That's awesome, so, man. It's inspiring.
Yeah.
It's good for you.
It sure is. And for the jawheads listening to this that want to actually watch it, where is the best place to find it online? Is it going to be on YouTube? Is it just going to be on your site or such?
So we have a dedicated YouTube channel, and that's youtube.com/user/blacktheweb-series.com. If you ever get lost, just go to blacktheweb-series.com. We've got multiple links on there, and you can find out about all of our sponsors, such as Blackhawk, which is a huge worldwide tactical company which donated thousands of dollars of gear. Mm-hmm. Stickerups.com, which is this sort of decal company that makes weapon decals, and they've been sponsoring us consistently. Combat Swag, Dark Angel Medical, Moderno, I'm missing somebody, Airsoft Extreme, Evike Airsoft, you know, you can go down the list here. There's just all these companies that have either donated a harness or a holster or a prop, and have come together and really helped us out.
And I did want to ask, since the creation of it and you came up with the idea of, all right, we're going to go ahead and do this, and you do the Kickstarter, up until now, how much time has passed here?
We've had some twists and turns. We did our Kickstarter October of last year. We shot in January of this year, and then we got into post, and everything was going along, and we had VFX that needed to be done, obviously. There was some pretty extensive firefights and everything, and for cost, we did all of that with VFX. So I'm hoping that some people look at this and be like, wow, that looks absolutely real, because I feel it does.
Mm-hmm.
But our lead VFX guy who we had on there, phenomenal guy, he got a better opportunity. And he's working on a very high-level film right now, starring an A-list actor. And I couldn't fault him. I was like, brother, you got to go.
Mm-hmm.
So he went, and he's working on that. And that we had to scramble and find a couple of other people.
Yeah.
But everything happens for a reason. The people we got are great. This other guy gets to move on to the next project, and maybe we'll meet up down the road. You know, so now here we are, January till now, we're rolling out, and season two hopefully will be right behind us.
Great. And also, one other question, as far as the first season, the first episode is out, and then are they going to release weekly? Or?
Yeah, so we'll have one every week for 6 weeks. We'll come out with some behind-the-scenes stuff week after week after that, and then our plan, if all goes to form, we'll launch another Kickstarter with bigger and better rewards. I can't wait to get into this Kickstarter discussion, by the way, about the celebs, because this is a hot
topic.
It's
going to be good.
This is going to be good.
And we're also trying to partner up with some high-level brands to take our material, show them what we can do with Next to Nothing. And if they can come in with some of their top-level products, maybe automotive, we can really expand and show people what we can do at an independent level.
Awesome.
It's great. And I highly encourage everybody listening to go check out this website. The website alone is a real treat to just click around. It's so cool what you did with that site. It's like you're on like a Black Ops website. Go see it.
Go see their website. The whole thing has been like, you know, redacted, and it's all very, you know, clandestine.
Yeah, censored out.
There's maps of Dubai and like, where are we? What's going on? But on there, you'll learn about you know, all of our amazing cast. Wesley John, who's been on The Unit and in The Scorpion King, and Constantine, and Andre. You know, Andre, this is a funny story. Andre Jackson is one of our actors. He is not only the Marine recon guy, the Marine sniper, but he was the lead on Lion King on Broadway for multiple years in a row.
Oh, really? Wow.
So you've got this guy who's Broadway trained, who's actually playing a sniper in our storyline, you know what I mean? And it's such a great collective group of people all getting together to bring their talents, and they loved it. They were just like, I get to dress up and, you know, get out here and try to play a soldier or a CIA guy. It was an awesome experience.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, Jawheads, definitely check it out. Black, the web series. I'm pumped to see it all.
I am too.
Yeah. Frank is going to be sitting in on this entire Jaw. He is a film fanatic. He also has his 5 films he's looking forward to seeing this fall.
Yep.
Matt, it brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, Interested or Ignore. And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
the new 400 Theater.
Whoa, I was just up there this weekend, Matt.
Were you?
Yes, there is no better theater in the Rogers Park area of Chicago. If you're there, you got to go check out the new 400. Full liquor bar, best prices on first-run movies in all of Chicago.
And they have an amazing drink special running right now, Ryan. Two drinks for $6. Domestic beer, well, cocktails. Wow.
Yes.
I mean, like, that's all you need, right?
And not to mention they are now playing classic films at midnight both Friday and Saturday night. This past weekend was Back to the Future. Check out their website to what's playing at the new 400.
We thank them for their support.
Interest or ignore this week is Getaway. Former race car driver Brent Magna is pitted against the clock, a custom Shelby Cobra Mustang, taking it and its unwitting owner on a high-speed adventure at the command of a mysterious villain on a race against time to save the life of his kidnapped wife. The film stars Ethan Hawke and, Matt, your favorite, Selena Gomez. Interested or ignore on The Getaway, Matt?
I saw this trailer. It kind of looks stupid. I don't know, man. I'm going to ignore this.
We throw it over to Frank. Interest or ignore on Getaway.
This is like a bad version of Drive mixed in with The Call, that Halle Berry movie, and the other one, like Cell Phone.
Phone Booth.
Phone Booth. Yeah. Well, that's, you're going back to, yeah, what's his name? Colin, right?
Colin Farrell, yeah.
It's you know, it's tough, you know?
Is that an ignore?
It's an ignore.
Couldn't agree more with you guys. The only saving grace here being Ethan Hawke, because he usually lately has been on a roll. Even The Purge and some of the other stuff that I thought was
sinister,
skeptical,
wasn't bad at all.
He keeps on a roll, but I still got to say ignore this one. Three ignores for Getaway.
Although, to be honest, I probably will go see it if it comes to the 400 because, you know, I see
it's a two drink, you know, for the price of one. I mean, that's going to make it that much better of a movie.
Yeah, that might be four drinks for you on that one.
It wasn't even a plug necessarily. I usually see everything that's at that theater. So,
well, speaking of new movies and speaking of the new 400, Matt, you got out and caught Jobs. Tell us about it.
I did. I saw Jobs last night, and I really wanted to like this film. I'm a big fan of the Walter Isaacson biography of Steve Jobs, which I think this was largely based on. Ashton Kutcher absolutely channels Steve Jobs.
Oh, come on.
I think he does. There's a lot of scenes. I mean, when we first heard that casting choice, everybody was like, what are you talking about?
I'm still like that.
No, but when you see him, he looks like Steve Jobs. He definitely looks like Steve Jobs. I mean, he got it down very, very well. Where it fails, though, I think that they just picked the wrong story points. Here's a story about a bitter, sociopathic asshole who gets revenge on his business partners. That's the elevator pitch for Steve Jobs. I mean, here, this is a guy who changed the world. It should have been inspirational and amazing. And I just think, unfortunately, yeah, you want to show him as a human being who has flaws and character, you know, flaws. But he had plenty of those. Show his good sides, too. I think they concentrated on the flaws too much, and it really hurt the film. I do want to highlight the cast, though. I mean, this guy, Josh Gad, was amazing as the Waz.
Gotcha.
Probably one of the best scenes in the movie was between him and Kutcher. And again, I think Kutcher was amazing. My local bartender, who's a big movie fanatic, said this is Oscar-worthy performance from Kutcher. I think if the movie had been a little better, I might even agree. It was that great of a cast. The whole cast, fantastic. Ultimately, and I've seen so many negative reviews, and I'm like, no, that wasn't it. That wasn't it either. I think what this movie did wrong was its cadence. It's uneven. They missed the crescendos like we were talking about with your project. They just missed that pattern. It's very choppy and uneven and ultimately somewhat disappointing. I give it 2.5 Jaws.
Wow.
Feel free to skip it. If you're a huge fan of Jobs or Ashton Kutcher, I do recommend you see this. You probably will leave a little disappointed, especially the ending. It's like, oh man, they really ended it on the wrong note.
So can I throw a question out there?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
What's a biopic that you really love? So that we get a sense as the listeners, like, what is your version of a not good biopic and what's a version of a great biopic?
Well, I think Walk the Line with Joaquin Phoenix as Johnny Cash was phenomenal. I'm trying to even think of another ones, but you know, I really love, there's been a bunch. Ray with
Ray.
Jamie Foxx was good. Those are two music biopics.
Ray really kind of hit the home runs where it needed to.
What about
to.
The Aviator with DiCaprio? Playing.
Is that really a biopic? I don't think so. I guess a little.
I think he played it that way.
Yeah, I believe so. And right, also, he also did it with J. Edgar as well, more or less.
Yeah. J. Edgar, not so good.
Yeah, not so good. I was going to say that would be my bad pick.
But just even from the trailer, I feel like there's no zest. There's no spark in that in Jobs.
It's a shame because again, I think the performances were there. It's maybe a failure in editing or just a script.
Does it play at all about the global impact? I mean, do you see beyond the offices?
No, and that's the thing. Like, I didn't need to see the story of the iPhone rehash. They don't go there. The last invention, which is actually the very beginning of the movie, they kind of show this in the trailer. I'm not giving anything away. Is Jobs introducing the iPod to the town hall at Apple in 2001. That's pretty much his pinnacle, is showing the iPod, which I get. Okay, that was really the moment that started the change. But there's so many other things. He changed retail, like this and that. I mean, put in some of his accomplishments and not just like how much of a jerk he was, you know?
Wow. And this coming from a big Steve Jobs fan.
I am. I mean, here we are podcasting. Yeah. Well, we may not be doing this. We're not for that guy.
Well,
so.
Yep. Talk about disappointed, Matt. I wanted to give you my second take on Elysium.
Oh,
all right.
Bring it on.
I was very, very disappointed.
Did you see this, Frank?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I see every movie that comes out.
Very disappointed with Elysium. For a movie with such an interesting concept, the script lacked substance. This is a prime example of, if you've seen the trailer, you have seen the movie. The commentary on healthcare and citizenship hits you over the head, yet neither theme is explored much. After the interesting setup explaining why the wealthy live on the space station Elysium, the movie turns into a generic sci-fi film. Matt Damon did his best in the role, but I gotta say he was miscast. Even with a shaved head and tattoos, I just do not believe him as a thug who's done multiple jail stints. Meanwhile, Jodie Foster's character has some bizarre accent going on that no other character has in the movie.
She was French, dude. She's French.
No, I don't know what kind of accent
this was.
It was
like South African. You know, it was definitely all over the place. Yes. But British, kind of.
She has little room to work in this film, and her character's motivations are never really fully explained. Then there's the point of these super healthcare machines that can diagnose and cure anything in a matter of about 45 seconds. The way they're portrayed in the film is that everyone on Elysium has them. So they must be cheap at this point. So why not share some of these with the people on Earth so you do not have to put up with the constant barrage of illegals trying to infiltrate your stupid space station to get to the machines? I'm just talking out loud here, Matt. The action scenes were boring. The ending was predictable. This was an epic fail in my book. Ride the movie guy's grade, 1.5 Jaws.
Wow. I don't think it was an epic fail. I thought it was a fun sci-fi ride.
I was so disappointed. I think maybe because I was so looking forward to this one as well. Sometimes expectations get in the way of really judging a film. I think I went in with such high hopes, and I was just...
What about the action? It was pretty good, right? Okay, this was no District 9.
Well, here's my question on that. I mean, if you had not seen District 9, would you grade Elysium so low? Is the action boring now because you've seen the same thing from Neil Blomkamp before?
Maybe partly, but I can't even mention one of the great action scenes in the movie. I mean, none of them.
Oh man, when he gets his face blown off by the grenade,
or how about the chemrail gun and the exoskeletons? You take your pick.
Yeah, dude, this movie was so cyberpunk.
I'm literally gonna pound him right now. I'm gonna fist bump right now because that is action. It's good. It's great action. But you're absolutely right. It lacks in story.
It does. And
I agree. I think I said that in my review, yeah.
At the end of the film, they show them, they get citizenship and yada yada. And at the end, there's this ship coming down with tons of these healthcare machines. Like, it was just so vague on how much these things cost. Or there should be some type of reason on why the wealthy are keeping this from...
Because they want to stay wealthy, Rye. They want to stay rich.
Yeah, but what would be the harm of letting people use it down on Earth?
Then they would end the classes. They would level the playing field. They don't want to do that. They want to stay on top.
It's a method of control, I guess.
I don't know. To me, that whole entire area of the film just seemed like very unexplained, very shallow. Like they were trying to get to the point of making a commentary on healthcare, on citizenship, but they did so just so shallow. I don't know. They just didn't explain enough of it to me.
I will say right. Charlton Copley was literally a shadow of himself. I mean, that guy was phenomenal
villain,
in District 9, and he's great in Europa Report, which
I haven't
is out
seen
right
that
now.
Yet.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he was underused specifically because he was just like this caricature of a mercenary.
Right. And that's how I felt Jodie Foster was, too. What I said in the review is, like, her motivations just aren't explained enough. So it's just she comes off like a character of, like, oh, well, we needed this evil person, this Sigourney Weaver type, to sit in the space station.
She was Sigourney Weaver.
And tell everybody that they can't come to Elysium and that, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, what is going on? And that damn accent was just annoying. I don't know.
What about the art direction, though? I mean, it was so beautiful. Yeah. Didn't you love it?
Like I did early on, especially the look of the charred earth early on. They show it all. The
graffiti
grittiness.
Covered everything.
I liked all that.
Yeah.
But you know what? I will say, this is my last point. We can move on. If everything is so tightly controlled, because it was sort of Orwellian, right? Like, you're being watched constantly. How did they get away with the graffiti?
Yeah.
You know?
My question is, why does the entire control room or every control room on that big circular planet thing, Elysium, why does every single one have vegetation inside the control rooms? Like, who maintains that? Like, some dude comes through with water and, like, prunes all that stuff, and it's,
probably.
Like, right there next to command. It just seemed a little strange.
Yeah.
Like, why did they need that in there?
It was very lush.
And to be honest, they didn't explain enough about this space station because it was so interesting looking when you first see it in the movie. It's
how does
is,
the gravity work?
Yeah,
how does the atmosphere work?
Yeah.
You just kind of come flying in, and then there's no shield. We're just going to come right down and land, and there's no atmosphere buffer.
And if they explained a little bit of that, I would have liked it more.
It was gravity, fellas. It was spinning. It was centrifugal force.
I get that,
force.
Gravity. Where's the oxygen layer? How does, like, this
centrifugal force holds the oxygen onto the surface
of
the...
Oh, is that right?
It holds oxygen.
Oh, interesting.
It's a little science lesson for everybody.
There you go.
I didn't know that.
1.5 Jaws, though. I was very, very disappointed with Elysium, and that was one of the films I was looking forward to this summer. And right before we go to our fall movie preview, I threw this out onto Twitter as well, and I wanted to ask you guys what your favorite movie was of summer 2013. Frank, we'll start with you.
Oblivion. Hands down.
Joe
Kaczynski, director of Tron Legacy.
I didn't see this coming at all.
Before that, he did a couple of other films that short, like different projects and everything. But Kaczynski did all the art direction for Tron Legacy. And if you look at that film, it's beautiful.
Absolutely,
story lacks, right? Character acting, it's a lot of green screen.
Sure.
I think he hit a phenomenal home run. And I tell you, I mean, I love the story. I love Utah production value. I mean, he created and designed the bubble ship. He created and designed that, you know, Sky House. Even the suits, the weapons and the tech and the drones. You know, I follow the guy, strange enough, on Facebook. I liked his page. The guy who, I think it's Daniel Simon, who created the designs for the bubble ship and the drone and just the iterations of those devices and how they're so real, how they're so visceral.
Mm-hmm.
Like the drone, have you both seen Oblivion?
Yes.
I have not.
Like, the drone's a living thing. It's a machine, but it's an entity. It's a villain.
It's a villain
in
the
story.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I thought all the performances were great.
Villain and a hero at certain points.
And the score by M83 is just phenomenal.
And this was one of my reasons I wanted to see the film. So I was mad I missed it because I love M83. So
shot 100% in IMAX. Saw it at Navy Pier twice.
I did not see it in IMAX.
I took my wife back just to see it in the IMAX because full screen, 100% of the
gorgeous
film.
Gorgeous, I bet.
Phenomenal.
I saw it in 3D. It was great. It was good.
Yeah.
Are there any shots of Tom Cruise running with his shirt off?
No shirt off.
No.
No. He wears the jacket most of the time.
He does take his shirt off during a love scene. But
and there's a pool scene.
Yeah.
Well, there's some Tom skin
in there. It's out on DVD. It just came out like a week ago. I'm definitely going to give it a spin. Matt, what do you got for your favorite this summer? Let me guess. Oh, boy. Here we go.
My favorite this summer, and I'm not sick of talking about this movie. I think it was Man of Steel. I don't think it was Man of Steel. It was Man of Steel.
I can't believe this.
I can't either.
I'm a nerd for superhero movies, and I think that this one is just what Warner Brothers needed to the shot in the arm to connect Batman and Superman, like give it the realism, and now they can move forward and you know, try to put the DC universe back onto the silver screen like Marvel has been able to do.
Wow.
So.
Wow. I mean, I thought it was a piece of junk, but I will
definitely
say...
Definitely not a piece of junk, right?
I will say...
You need to stop saying that.
That's a huge, huge expectation.
If you want to know how bad I thought Elysium was, I'd take Man of Steel over it. And you know,
wow, dude,
I hate Man of Steel.
Wait, is he saying Elysium's worse? Or
yeah, I'm saying Elysium is worse.
Wow.
Yeah. That's how rough I was.
They're both okay movies, at least.
Oh, boy. All right. For my best. Hey,
but real quick, I got to say, if you took Russell Crowe and Kevin Costner out of that movie, how good is that movie?
Not as good, but they were in it.
I get that, but they're not even the lead characters. They're ancillary characters.
Take Ray Liotta and Robert De Niro out of Goodfellas, how good is that movie?
They're the stars. I mean, Cavill was like, you know, I wanted him to be more. And it's like he was not the best performance, and he's Superman.
See, but here's the thing. I think Superman is a blank slate that we put expectations on him. Anyway, all right, we can stop talking. We're really annoying poor Rye, the movie.
Brandon Routh or Cavill?
Brandon Routh.
Yeah.
I think he had more heart as Superman. I really do.
And he was probably a better Clark Kent.
I like that Superman better than Man of Steel.
Oh, boy.
I do.
it's a tie for me. I really like that Superman too. Superman Returns was
I mean,
good in my
book. It's got a lot of problems with the whole big thing about the kryptonite and the planet and lifting up the thing and all that stuff.
A lot of problems.
But I liked it better.
Now, for my favorite of the summer too, I wanted to mention, I thought the summer was dominated with great indie films to highlight. The number one film, I think it's if you saw it, it's a no-brainer. Before Midnight, I think, is the best film that was released this summer.
It's probably going to win an Oscar. So
also, I loved The Way Way Back. I loved Blue Jasmine, Woody Allen's latest. It seemed like there was a lot of great indie out. If I had to mention sort of a bigger film that caught me by surprise, wow, was The Conjuring a hell of a lot better than I ever thought it would be.
Wow.
Now, Matt, we threw this out to the Jawheads on Twitter. I asked them what their favorite summer movie was. Did we get any responses?
We sure did. C.M. Gardner, who is at @juvenile_cinephile, said, Francis Ha, for black and white photography, early French New Wave flourishes, and being a little bit relatable in the good and bad.
Did you see Francis Ha?
No, I have Frank? Not.
It was pretty good also. I did like it. That's a Noah Baumbach.
First Time Watchers, who is at First Time Watchers on Twitter, said, Only God Forgives, a fever dream of epic proportions that staggers the mind and soul. The most beautiful film of the year.
Wow. I have not seen it, but I've actually heard some bad things about this movie.
It is
as
one
well.
Of the worst movies of all time.
Come on,
so
Frank.
First time showings, First time watchers. Well, then you should go see something else because it's, I mean, Drive is phenomenal. Only God Forgives. Only God Forgive You for seeing that movie. It's terrible.
They reteamed the director.
It's narcissistic. It's self-masturbatory. It's just
and
it's terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Wow. Gosling, now I want to see it. Dude.
Gosling did it purely on faith that his dude, you know, whatever is, I can't think of his name right now, but who did Drive, he was like, dude, that was a home run. Let's go. Of course, I'm with you. And then I'm sure when it was done.
Gunn, right? What's his name?
No, it's Ruff.
Rafe or something.
Yeah,
But this, yeah, I heard it was
Jawbox. We're going to throw it in the Jawbox. Frank, we forgot to tell you, if you have a fact you can't think of, throw it in the Jawbox. Elias will look it up during the break and come back with the facts.
Go for it.
Any others, Matt?
Yeah, we let's see. Books Not Wooks said, two films that stuck out mostly for their powerful, resonant lead performances, The Hunt and Blue Jasmine.
Ooh.
And then he said, is it fall yet? Not a summer movie fan. Mark Herney said, Before Midnight, agreeing with you there, Rye, we check in with Jesse and Celine every 9 years, and this summer we were with them in Greece. I get it. You guys are beautiful fans.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I love it.
I've got to see this series. Alka Hollywood agrees with me. Spring Breakers and Pain and Gain both were wonderfully neon-tinged tales of violence and moral ambiguity and totally hilarious.
It sounds like Alka Hollywood there needs a few more beers or they were really drunk when they saw
Pain. I'm getting the
Pain
sense now. You are like the indie guy and you are like the mainstream
welcome.
Guy.
Welcome to Cinema Job. And then last but certainly not least, our dear friend Barry, who is at DarthG007 on Twitter, said, Man of Steel, 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 Man of Steel. I believe that's 140 characters
worth
of Man of Steel.
As Man of Steel fans, who do you think should play Batman if they partner up?
That's a great question. I think the best candidate that has been rumored for the role is got to be Josh Brolin.
I mean... I'm curious.
They're going for older.
How about Ryan Gosling? I like Gosling.
Too pretty. He's too pretty.
And too young.
And too slight. I mean, you know, he's
Did
he's
you see
a good
the,
actor.
The one what was the L it was kinda like LA Confidential with Gosling. Hey,
oh, Gangster
box
Squad
over here. Gangster Squad.
Yes, I saw it.
I mean, that's kind of you watch that, there's some Bruce Wayne in him. You know what I mean? You can kind of see him as Wayne.
But a younger Bruce Wayne. Yeah.
You know, I'm not talking Gosling. I'm talking Brolin.
Because they were both in the film. I thought you were talking Gosling.
I would never even put Ryan Gosling as Batman. So that was never a part of my brain action right there.
I think Brolin is an absolutely great choice for Batman, both as Batman and Bruce Wayne. There's definitely some Bruce Wayne in him.
Yeah.
Well.
Especially the older, grizzled Bruce Wayne.
Yeah,
you know?
that's exactly it.
I mean, Barry, for saying Man of Steel 15 times on Twitter, you just went down 5 notches in my book.
Wow.
And up 5 notches in mine.
That's how it works here on Jaw. If we miss one, Jawheads, and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet, @CinemaJaw. Let us know what it is. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going. But now, Matt, we are done with the summer movies, and we are moving on to the fall.
All right. I know you're happy about this.
I am always happy about fall movie season. It is my favorite of the year, and I'm getting us started this week with my number 5 film I'm looking forward to. It comes to us from the Coen brothers, Inside Llewelyn Davis. This has got to be on everybody's list, huh? Directed by Joel and Ethan Coen. The film stars Oscar Isaac.
I was going to say I've seen this one, but that's the pornographic film.
It also stars Carey Mulligan, Justin Timberlake. It tells the story of singer-songwriter who navigates through New York's folk music scene in the 1960s. It's already been in a few film festivals, and the buzz is high on it. It's a Coen brothers.
Sure.
Of course it's going to be. But
I love
trailer,
the Coen
I love that they love the music, the folk music. It's really a highlight in the film. It's almost a character in the movie. I can't wait to see it.
Sounds cool.
Matt, what do you got sitting at number five?
At number five, I have definitely a different pick. We mentioned this earlier in the podcast. I'm talking about Machete Kills. I was a huge fan of the first one, which I'll review later. And I'm excited to see the sequel to this. I think Rodriguez has a cool little Mexploitation franchise on his hands.
We'll see. I was a very big fan of the first one as well. I actually did enjoy it. But I think it was a one and done. I don't think this should have turned into a series in any way.
And that's why it should.
Wow.
That's why it should.
Frank, what do you got sitting at number five? Pick us up a notch.
It's definitely not Machete Kills. Goodness gracious. I didn't know.
It's only a number five, okay?
I didn't know I had to rank these by numbers.
Oh, that's fine. Just throw
them
out there.
I'm going to go with The Counselor for number five. Ridley Scott directing, that can go good or bad, but Fassbender, Diaz, Cruz, Pitt, Bardem, I mean, you know, it's written by Cormac McCarthy, who run the Pulitzer for The Road, which is a phenomenal book, not to mention movie.
Well, the movie.
I think the parts are there, I mean, but the trailer scares me a little bit.
Yeah, now Cormac McCarthy just wrote a screenplay on this. It's not based on one of his books.
No,
original screenplay,
I just
correct?
Love Cormac McCarthy because of The Road so
me
phenomenally because I'm a zombie junkie, and that was, yeah, anyways.
Yeah.
But it wasn't zombies. That sounds strange. You know what I'm saying.
Sure.
Post-apocalyptic.
I actually thought The Road is probably in my top three favorite books read in my whole life. But the movie, to me, was just garbage.
Yeah. It's tough, though. It's hard to translate.
You can't translate that book to screen.
Like when they found the bunker and they found all the food. I mean, I was at an airport and I like jumped up and I was like, yes!
Yeah.
People are like, what are you talking about?
And that's the first time he has soda. He gives the kid the can of soda. That's fine. I mean, the whole book, I just devoured it. I love that book.
Incredible.
But yeah. I'm interested in seeing that one as well. Great pick there, Frank.
Hey.
The Counselor.
You guys are going to hate my list.
All right, number four. I'm keeping it strong here with American Hustle, directed by David O. Russell.
Mm. That was a rhyme.
Ooh.
Well done.
Yes.
Well done.
Listen to the film cast here, Matt. You got Christian Bale, Bradley Cooper, Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner, Jennifer Lawrence, and Robert De Niro. And it tells the story of the FBI sting operation in the late 1970s that went on to expose public corruption. So they basically went to senators and House representatives and tried to see if they would actually take bribes. It's got the whole 70s look. If you've seen the trailer, everybody's donning their 70s gear. It,
nice.
It looks awesome. I can't wait to see it. And David O. Russell usually does me no wrong. That is my number four, American Hustle. What do you got sitting there, Matt?
Okay, you knew this was coming, so let's just get it out of the way,
boy.
Okay? Let's just get this out of the
way. Hit me over the head with your hammer now.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm excited for Thor. The Dark World.
All right, we'll give you a buzz.
Give me a ding. Come on, there are other people excited for this.
I guess.
Out of all the franchises.
I'm a Marvel guy, okay?
I get that. I'm pumped about Ant-Man. I'm pumped about a lot of things, but
the first Thor? Did you like the first Thor?
It was okay. It was all set up. It was all set up for Avengers.
Yeah, that's how I felt about Iron Man 3, unfortunately. Yeah. Hopefully they don't make the same mistake with Thor the Dark World. It looks like a cool little indie. I mean, at this point, you can call it like a minor blockbuster, right? It's like the indie blockbuster.
I guess.
You think Natalie Portman's going to die?
I think Natalie Portman's going to die.
It's good, though. That'd be nice. The dark edge to Thor.
And speaking of that, I'm actually disappointed because we haven't seen Natalie Portman. She had a baby, so we haven't seen her on screen in a long time. She finally comes back, and it's Thor 2. What a disappointment.
She's got a baby to feed,
Thor,
bro.
It's Thor the Dark World, not Thor 2.
The Dark World.
At least it's not Thor 2. I mean, she's got a kid to feed, right? She's got to take those paycheck jobs,
that's
man.
That's right.
All right.
It's going to be a good movie. My words.
I believe Thor 2, The Bigger Hammer, comes out in November sometime.
Also in the adult section.
Well done. Well done.
All right. Frank, what do you got sitting at number four?
Number four. It's a strange pick, but Riddick.
Whoa, that is strange.
Yeah.
I don't disagree. I love
it. Look, it's David Twofey again, the same guy who did the first one.
Pitch Black.
Did the second one. Brought in this necromonger thing, which, you know, I like the story in two. It was a little all over the place, but I don't think you can you know, I don't think you can go wrong again. If you like that genre and you're a big Vin Diesel fan, it's what he's known for. I also like that Carl Urban's in it, which is he relaunched Dredd the way Dredd should be.
Yeah.
They're pushing for the Dredd sequel.
We are all big fans here.
We are.
I mean, you go see that movie and it's Dredd the way it should be, and I hope they do a sequel. Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a fun ride.
Now I've watched Pitch Black. I didn't like it. What did I do wrong?
You didn't like
Pitch Black?
No.
I mean, it's the indiest of the three, so you can kind of see the flaws. The second one, I think it was, again, good setup for the second one. Second one had large scale. You know, it was kind of big and out there.
Was the second one Chronicles, or was that the
Chronicles.
Third?
Okay. Yeah. So, but I mean, I liked one a lot, and what I really like about Riddick is it looks like they're going back to the roots of the first one.
You're right.
You know?
Yeah.
One place,
horror.
Bounty hunters, get this necromonger weirdness out of there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. Into our threes. And at number three, I got a film that comes out December 13th. George Clooney directed. I'm speaking of The Monuments Men. This looks very, very interesting. And what a cool story to pick up on and translate to film. It's co-written, produced, and directed by George Clooney, starring Matt Damon, Bill Murray, Clooney himself, John Goodman, and Cate Blanchett. And it tells the story of a group of soldiers tasked with saving pieces of art and other culturally important items before they were destroyed by Hitler during World War II. But the film is not all that serious. If you've seen the trailer, it's definitely got some comedy, some humor to it. It's the
It feels
cast.
Like a great family pick. I'm
it
excited.
Does. I can't wait. I mean, John Goodman looks hilarious in there.
It's great. I love it. I think it's a phenomenal pick.
Yeah, and George Clooney directing, I'm a huge fan of. So The Monuments Men, December 13th, I'm there.
Can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely looks better than Gravity. Oh, my God.
Hey, that was an honorable
mention.
That's on
my list.
Okay, all right.
That's on my list.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Sorry, man. Sorry.
Hold on. But I'll tell you what I have a problem with Gravity, but we'll get there. What do you got sitting at number three, Matt?
At number three, I have one that I'm probably going to get more flack over than the rest of my list so far, but I am actually curious, therefore looking forward to Old Boy, the remake. Josh Brolin, we were just talking about him. This guy is on a serious roll. I've loved him ever since Goonies. And I really want to see his take on the character, you know, Odaisu, although they'll probably change his name.
that guy from Uptown named Odaisu.
Right.
I
think his name is Joe in the film. It comes out late November. Spike Lee directed it. I'm excited.
If you're a fan of the original, you got to be semi-excited to see what they do. Same exact feeling I have with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Mm-hmm. I love the original.
Yes.
I didn't want to see the remake, but they made it, so I'm curious to go see what they did with it.
And the remake of Dragon Tattoo was okay.
Yeah.
It was all right.
Yeah, I'll see what they do with Old Boy.
This could be good. Do I think it's going to be better? No. But yeah. I'm excited to see it.
Frank, what do you got sitting there?
Well, it was Gravity, but now I just realized that's a terrible pick. But I'm going to try to convince you as to why you should see it.
Okay,
Clooney,
please.
Can't go wrong. Clooney's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
I mean, he has made bad films in the past, made at least okay good films.
Yeah, he made the Bat Nipples film.
But
but he even admits that he brought down that franchise,
but
it's his own fault.
But look who
that
directed.
Takes a big actor.
Look who directed Gravity.
Well, that's the big thing. This
right.
guy, Alfonso, and I'll probably say his last name wrong, Cuarón.
Cuarón, yeah.
Right? He did Children of Men.
Absolutely.
Now, one of the greatest films of all time is Children of Men.
Mm-hmm.
One of some of the greatest cinematic one-off shots.
I'm not a fan.
You don't like Children of Men?
I'm not a fan.
I'm going to drop the mic right
you
now.
You don't like Spring
My time
Breakers.
Is over. Thanks
hey,
to everybody.
Frank,
have a good time.
Nice to meet
it's
you,
a pleasure
buddy.
To meet you. Yes, good to see everybody. Can I get a check for this bad taste in my mouth? Yeah, how can you not like that movie?
How can you not like Spring Breakers? We got to agree to disagree here.
Yeah, we do.
Wow.
We do.
Children of Men is a masterpiece.
Children of Men is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I fell asleep. Go on.
Wow.
Go on. I'm sorry, guys.
You were speaking of the single shot that
the
one,
way they
one
do,
in the car.
The way they
so
do the
amazing.
Shot in the van, and then they got the crew on the top, and the camera never breaks, and it's literally one shot, and if you watch the behind
there
the scenes.
There is some good cinematography in Children of Men.
But there's great,
beautiful.
Compelling story.
It is. I had a tear in my eye at the end. Loved it.
The tank sequence at the end in the building. And
back to Gravity. He's the reason why I'm interested in checking this out, and I like George Clooney, but it's got one major handicap. Sandra Bullock. I can't stand her, and I think she looks ridiculous as an astronaut.
Really?
You know I can't believe her floating around in space.
I did a little research. He actually wanted to be two things in his life. He wanted to be a filmmaker and wanted to be an astronaut. So, I mean, I think you're taking a guy who's already made a great film, contrary to what some people think, and at the same time, you're combining it with his lifelong passion, which is, you know, aeronautics and space. I think you're going to get a good film.
See, another problem is, if you've seen the trailer, Sandra Bullock starts floating away in space at one point.
Yeah.
And I hate her so much that I can't help but be cheering, like, yes, don't save her, don't save her. I would just be
just
waving.
Fling
push
it to
that
the
solar
sun.
Panel out of the way. Just break it. In fact, I would push out my hand, and right when she went to grab it, I'd pull it away and say, see you later, Sandy.
Psych! Dude, okay, so here's the thing. Have you seen this trailer in a room, a crowded theater yet?
Yeah.
Okay, you have?
Yeah.
I did just over the weekend, and people literally laughed out loud at this. They were like, what the hell was that? The whole theater was in consensus that that looked stupid.
Well, I mean,
I could just be wrong. I'm willing to be wrong.
There's people out there that don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Absolutely.
For me, I'm really being serious. I was making a joke about hating Bullock so much that I'd push her off into space. But I do
No, you were serious about that.
I do dislike her so much. And she just looks wrong in the role. I don't know. There's something about her in space that just doesn't vibe
for
me.
You heard that Michael Keaton was going to be Batman, what'd you think then?
I don't know. We'll see. But
come on.
Right now, I don't want to see Sandy Bullock as she goes by outer space.
Let's give everybody a chance.
All right. Here we get serious.
She's had some good turns. I don't hate her quite as much as Ryan does.
Here, my top two, both should be my number one. It was tough to put them in place here. But at number two, I went with... the new film from director Steve McQueen. I'm speaking 12 Years a Slave. Now, Steve McQueen directed my movie of the year, Shame, a couple years ago. He also directed Hunger. I love that film as well.
No.
Oh, okay. Boy. All right. We'll get there. Hold on. 12 Years a Slave stars Brad Pitt, Michael Fassbender, Benedict Cumberbatch. It's based on the 1853 autobiography of Solomon Northup, a free black man who was actually kidnapped in Washington, D.C. in 1841 and sold into slavery. He worked on plantations for 12 years, hence the name. If you've seen the trailer, this looks like a tearjerker. It looks like an epic film. And this guy, I love the way he shoots. I love the way Shame looks on screen. That's what I said, number one. And right away, he did it here again. I can just tell by the trailer this is going to be beautiful looking.
It looks beautiful. I mean, and you've got an all-star cast. I think you're crazy. I think Shame is just wild. It's good. It looks great. But I think 12 Years a Slave would definitely be a good film to go see, for sure.
We recently did our top three films of the past 4 years since Cinema Jaw got started, and Shame was my number three. To give you what high praise I have. There you go. That's my number two. 12 Years a Slave comes out in October. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
Again, I think this is probably an obvious pick that everybody was expecting to be on my list, but I'm a nerd, and The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug, is on my list, goddammit, at number two.
I can't believe it's on your list.
I mean, first of all, The Desolation of Smaug should be the name of our next band. Elias, we're going to start a band.
Yeah.
It's The Desolation of Smaug, okay? I just want to continue the story with Bilbo Baggins and the dwarves and the rest of, you know, Gandalf is there. I'm an addict. I am so in love with Peter Jackson's vision of Middle Earth that I can't get enough.
A year and a half ago or a year ago, I would be sitting here saying that I'm sure I'd be looking forward to this film a year later. But after seeing The Hobbit, I could give a rat's ass about this film.
But his films get better as they go. I mean, the same thing happened in the original Lord of the Rings movies.
First one was meh.
Yeah.
Then it really kicked in.
Yeah. I really liked the first one, The Lord of the Rings. I don't know, this first Hobbit film, I've watched it twice now because I thought maybe I missed something because it was
an hour and a half in the Hobbit hole.
It was too much. It was ridiculous.
There's a lot of dishes and things are going on. Somebody's making bread. I don't know.
Too much.
I agree with you. So this one I'm hoping kind of saves the franchise. We'll see.
Frank, what do you got sitting at number two?
And I'm just looking at my list. I'm realizing how diverse we all are, as it should be. But I'm just a popcorn movie kind of guy. So my number two is The World's End. With directed by Edgar Wright, starring Peg and that whole crew that did Hot Fuzz,
which will be coming out right when this podcast is released.
Yeah. And if you don't like Hot Fuzz, and what was the other one they did?
Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, I mean, Shaun of the Dead's phenomenal.
They've done a few others also,
and it's a formulaic style. It's a sort of a carbon copy of the whole thing. God bless them. You know what I mean? It works. It's good. I think that this is going to be hilarious. I'm just excited to see them all back together again because they just have an awesome time, and their comedy spot on.
I agree.
Simon Pegg's character looks awesome too. Yeah. Like that's like somebody we're gonna have posters of on our walls, and you're gonna see people dressed as him at Comic-Con.
Whole part at the beginning, just in the beginning of the trailer, he's like, you know, yeah, the Four Musketeers. He's like, it's actually the Three Musketeers. He's like, you know, you know, they based on you know, fictitious characters. He's like, no, it was written. You know, it's like, you know, the same people. The Bible's fictitious as well. Well, you know who wrote that? Yeah, Jesus. It's just they go nonstop, and it's just rapid fire. And I think that they're just great at what they do.
Comedic geniuses. Yep. I agree.
I like it. We're into our number ones. We have not crossed over once.
That's wild.
That is. And at number one, it's probably everybody's number one.
Oh, don't say that.
I doubt it's
mine. I bet money on it.
This film comes out Christmas Day, December 25th. It stars Julia Roberts, Meryl Streep, Chris Cooper, Ian McGregor, Abigail Breslin, Juliette Lewis, Benedict Cumberbatch again. I'm speaking of August, Osage County.
It does look good.
And
it's Oscar bait.
It is Oscar bait. Here's the thing about this.
So you like Oscar baiting is what you're talking about.
Here's the great thing about it, being a Chicagoan. I saw this as a play right here at Steppenwolf when it premiered. Mayor Daley in-house when he was mayor at the performance that I was at. There was a buzz because everybody was trying to get in there. It was sold out for I don't know how many months it played here. It went on to win the Pulitzer Prize. It won the Tony Awards for Best Play that year, Best Actor, Best Screenwriter for Tracy Letts. And it was just a phenomenal, you know, run that it had here in Chicago, then into New York. It's traveled now. And now they bring in this heavy cast. You got Meryl Streep playing.
Oh, yeah.
You got the monarch of the family, Julia Roberts, who I usually don't like. I actually think is cast pretty well here. Love the performance as a play.
And Juliette Lewis, said? Juliette Lewis?
Yeah. Can't wait to see what they do with it on screen. I agree, it's Oscar bait, but I love the trailer. I love the play. If you do get a chance to see it, Jawheads, and it's playing somewhere in a theater by you, check it out. It's awesome. It's cool. A three-hour-long play, too, so I wonder how long the movie's going to be.
Like an hour and a half. Be perfect.
That's my number one.
Well, you haven't heard? They're actually going to break it up into three movies.
Peter Jackson's
and
not directing.
And it's going to start slow, and then it's really going to get going.
Yeah, the first one's called The Desolation of Juliette Lewis.
That's right.
Matt, I have no idea what your number one is. There's no other superhero movies being released.
Yes.
Is there another Muppets movie I'm unaware of?
There is another sequel. Muppets. Yep. Yeah. Yep. I'm actually excited for that, but that is not my number one. My number one is actually going to be a controversial pick that some people might, once again, I'm probably going to catch holy hell for this entire list, but I am super stoked to see Ender's Game. I'm going to make...
Wow.
He's insane. I was with you this whole time, and then you throw that out there.
Remove the political backlash.
Okay.
Now, are you interested in the film or no?
Well, first of all, I don't even know what the political backlash
is. Oh, wow. Okay, good.
So it still sucks.
Really? I mean, you're not a fan of the books?
I haven't read the books. So maybe that's
why.
A factor.
Now,
and
Matt,
and you're emotionally connected.
I mean,
well, the books,
literature
there.
You like sci-fi, yes?
I do.
Okay, so these are Hugo Award-winning books.
Okay.
I mean, that is like the Pulitzer Prize of science fiction.
Let me
it's
just
the
be clear. I'm speaking on something I know nothing about. I mean, with that being said, the trailer is all I have to go off of.
Now, Matt, you do know, because you spoke so highly of this, I just recently purchased the book on my Nook.
And?
I haven't started reading yet.
Oh.
In the next week, I'll start it.
Please, let's.
Yeah. I want to have it done before the movie comes out.
It looks like a Twilight sci-fi mishmash.
No,
it's youngsters, and he's floating through space, and now there's a video game.
You've really got to read the book.
And you know who else is in here? Obviously, you got Ben Kingsley, Harrison Ford, but also Haley Steinfeld, I believe her name is, from True Grit. She was the girl in True Grit.
Yep.
And I haven't seen her, I don't think, on screen since then, so I'm excited to see what she does with Ender's Game, too.
I'm excited. Unfortunately, there is a political side which you don't know about, but I'll let the cat out of the bag. The writer of the books has taken some pretty serious stance on gay marriage, which I'll put out for the record. I do not agree with him. I think that's one of the greatest things about our country. We can disagree with people and still appreciate them anyway. I don't know. It's tough, right? I really wish he hadn't gotten
it. I think
it
filmmakers
ruined.
Should be filmmakers, man. You shouldn't have political statements. That you keep that to yourself.
No, he's
that's
not a filmmaker.
Business.
He's an author.
But,
man,
oh,
I think,
well, authors should be authors.
Man,
write
I think you're digging too deep into this, too. You're so concerned because I know you've talked
There's
about this
be
before.
There's going to be a huge
backlash.
Oh, wow. I'm not saying there isn't, but people like Frank didn't even know what the hell you were talking about. You know?
I should have mentioned it, then.
I'm just out of social media.
All right. We got August, Osage County. We got Ender's Game. Frank, what do you got sitting at number one?
Wah, wah, wah. I have The Wolf of Wall Street. Scorsese. The trailer, where the Ender's Game trailer, again, not knowing the system, that Ender's Game trailer bores me to death. I mean, and it's got...
I like watched it 15 times in a row. I'm not even kidding.
Wow.
But go on.
I look at the Wolf of Wall Street trailer as a throwback to, you know, Wall Street, Gordon Gekko times. But what I love about this is that phenomenal cast. You got DiCaprio right off the bat, McConaughey, Jonah Hill, Kyle Chandler, who was from Friday Night Lights. The key thing is this is all based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
So not only does it look like the flash and, you know, flash and bang, awesome 90s capitalism gone wrong, that kind of thing, securities fraud. Research just found out it's about Jordan Belfort, who served 22 months in federal prison for securities fraud and money laundering. So what's so great about it is that it's got such a cinematic look and feel. It's Scorsese again, dealing with Wall Street and Hollywood and all those different things, you know, not Hollywood, but New York. But at the same time, you're going to get so wrapped up, and those performances seem so great. And then it's also got that compelling edge of being the true story. Like Pain and Gain, I don't know if you've reviewed this in the past.
He has, yeah.
There comes that point in Pain and Gain where there's this, it's all the way through the movie and it's getting so outrageous. And then they just flash on the screen this tagline that says, this all really happened. You know, I don't know exactly what it said, but it was like, this is so crazy. And yet it still happened. And that's what I love about that, is that you get to watch a movie that's entertaining, but at the same time, it's based in some sort of truth. So almost to yours, about 12 Years a Slave.
And you know? And when has DiCaprio teamed up with Scorsese and not done at least a damn solid good movie? They never really miss, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you look at what they've worked on, even Shutter Island, which some critics didn't like, me and Matt were huge fans of.
I actually really love that movie.
Yeah.
Love it.
So every time they've worked together, it's been good. So yeah, it was an honorable mention of mine. Probably the only reason it didn't make my top five is we've seen so many movies about Wall Street lately. When the collapse happened, there was especially a lot of like documentaries.
Yeah, but Wall Street 2 just didn't look that. It didn't. You
Wall
know,
Street 2
didn't,
you
wasn't
had,
there.
It didn't
the fire wasn't there.
Yeah.
And,
but there were a lot of movies around there at that time. You know, that Kevin Spacey movie, Too Big to Fail. There were those kind of things.
But the trailer in this one just it looks hot. It spits fire. It feels like it's going to be a good ride. It feels feel like the entertainment value is there.
Couple.
Well,
others.
It's no Ender's Game. But.
You, sir, are so true. I have to ask you, being that you're so indie, what is a popcorn movie that you love? Because we both like popcorn movies. Give me like, I need to know.
Well, this particular 2013, I loved Star Trek Into Darkness.
Okay.
There you go. There was one.
That's a popcorn movie.
Yeah. He's got one. Okay.
I gave that one 4 Jaws. I was a big fan of that one.
I just needed to know.
A couple other ones coming out that I'm really pumped to see. Labor Day, starring Kate Winslet, Josh Brolin, directed by Jason Reitman.
Oh, this is the sequel to Independence Day, right?
I was going to say, I haven't heard of some of these films. I mean, he knows his stuff.
Yeah.
They're coming back. Labor Day.
Labor Day looks really good. Also, The Invisible Woman, which reteams Ralph Fiennes with Kristen Scott Thomas, English Patient fame, also directed by Ralph Fiennes.
Wow. Oh, this is Fantastic Four part.
No.
Oh,
no. Yeah. And then the last one I actually had listed was Gravity. I am interested for all the reasons I said, but hate it for Bullock.
Hmm. Yeah.
I got two quick honorables. Well, actually three. Anchorman, The Legend Continues. Kind of interested there.
I don't know if you can follow up on greatness, though.
Yeah, maybe
I don't
not.
Know. Milk was a bad choice. I mean, I don't know if you can copy some of those great moments.
I kind of agree with you there, man. Here's Oscar bait. Two Oscar baits for you. Saving Mr. Banks.
Ooh, Tommy Hanks.
Yeah, the true story of Mary Poppins. That's, you know, Hollywood loves movies about Hollywood. So,
yeah.
And the other one is The Secret Life of Walter Mitty with Ben Stiller, based on the James Thurber short story. This looks like maybe Ben Stiller's going for an Oscar.
Yes.
I don't know.
It looks very interesting. I was very, very intrigued by that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
My last one I didn't really put on the list. I had to pick five was Captain Phillips. Which is a Tom Hanks true story.
Yeah.
Well, being a guy who's a fan of military, I mean, it's all based on true story. It's all based on, you know, this Navy SEAL team. Mm-hmm. Some of the most amazing tactics ever. Two guys on the back of a boat shooting at another boat. One shot, saved that man's life. Just, you know, now I've ruined it for everybody, but it's all based in truth. But just
well, it's a true story. Right. It's
amazing.
In the news.
And to be able to get a firsthand perspective of something so one in a thousand, one in a million kind of experience like that.
Yeah. Well, it does look good.
Jawheads, if we missed one that you're looking forward to and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. Check out some of these trailers we mentioned because get pumped. It's fall movie season. We're going to take a break. We come back. We got a Cinema War looking at Kickstarter and Matt vs. Frank in Ethan Hawke movie trivia. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with the CinemaJaw Movie Fact. Director Kenneth Branagh conceptualized the first Thor film as a Norse comic book twist on William Shakespeare's Henry V, which was about a young king who underwent trials and tribulations fighting a war, courting a girl from another land, and trying to live up to the example set by his father, a beloved king. And that is your CinemaJaw Movie Fact.
Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with Frank Zetti.
Ziti. Like baked Ziti.
Frank
like the baked
Ziti.
Pasta.
Who has the web series Blackout Jawheads. Make sure you check it out. We threw a few items in the jaw box. Before we go any further, we got to open up that jaw box, Matt.
Yeah. Do we have to?
We have to.
All right.
Let's open her up.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box!
Oh, what's in the box?
What's going on, fellas?
Matt, I'm getting starting the t-shirts for our new band, The Desolation of Smog.
Yes! You're going to play guitar. I play bass.
Okay.
Rye's going to sing.
There might be a little bit of conflict, though, because my autobiography is called The Desolation of Elias, because I'm always in the Jawbox here alone. So
I like it.
There was actually just one thing in the Jawbox, I believe. The Drive director, Nicholas Refn.
Yeah.
R-E-F-N. Yeah.
I think you should just go by the dude who directed Drive.
Yeah, I like that as well.
Because then it's like, oh, that guy.
He's legally changing his name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Elias, are you excited about a movie coming out this fall? If we let you out of the Jawbox and you can see one movie, is there one that you want to see?
You know what? I read Ender's Game after Matt's recommendation. I'm excited to see it. Yeah.
So have to read it now.
So I'm in for a treat then when I got this book, huh?
Although it does look like a Twilight, ridiculous kid film.
We'll see.
Like,
money, baby. Yeah, it's all franchise. Yeah. They're just trying to get their audience.
Exactly.
All right, that's enough out of this guy. Get back in that Jawbox.
Thank you.
Matt, it brings us to a segment we call
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week, and our guest this week, Frank, gets to play judge and jury and tell the Jawheads who he thinks won this Cinema War. And it's important because me and Matt are battling for 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. Now, Frank has used Kickstarter, but so has Zach Braff. So has Spike Lee. Enough already. Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic: should established Hollywood stars like Zach Braff and Spike Lee use Kickstarter to fund their new projects? Matt, you'll be fighting that they should. Rye, you'll be fighting that they should not. Let the Cinema War begin.
Do I think movie studios should use Kickstarter? No. But Rye, Spike Lee and Zach Braff are not movie studios. They may have more fame than your average Joe, but Kickstarter is all about the will of the people. They have every right to use this platform on their vanity projects. If you don't like it, don't back it.
Matt, Kickstarter is a crowdfunding platform for gathering money from the public, with which circumvents traditional avenues of investment. When conceived in 2009, it had the struggling artist in mind, a way for people to raise funds to finish their projects. It was never meant for a place for Hollywood hotshots to come and suck money from.
Yeah, when Facebook started, it was just for college kids. This is silly. It's kind of like saying famous people shouldn't be on Twitter or have websites. You can't put the genie back into the bottle. These crowdfunding platforms exist, and if celebs want to use them for their art, then I'm all for it. If the fans want to see a project come to fruition, then, you know, if there's a will, there's a way. And if not, then it won't come to fruition.
No way, Matt. One of the major flaws I have with the likes of Zach Braff and Spike Lee using Kickstarter is it potentially takes money away from other projects, in the sense here that, let's just say, a guy has $20 to pledge. That's all he has. He might pick one of their more prolific projects over a project he originally intended to help out. And while Spike and Braff have connections to people and studios with money, that struggling unknown artist, he might not have that connection.
That's going to be leveled out here as we go along. The two things that have to be mentioned here are promotion and rewards. If you're a fan of Spike Lee, then why not buy his new film by pledging $20 on Kickstarter? Maybe you even get it before your friends. And if you are Spike Lee, then why not use the promotional power of Kickstarter to reach out to your fans and start building interest in your new film? It's not all about the money on either side. I think Kickstarter being used by anyone is A-okay.
No, and I'm glad you brought that point up, because this is my major flaw here with it. With Hollywood coming to Kickstarter, you could almost look at it as they're charging you twice for their movie. Once for you to fund it, and a second time for them to profit off it. This is not right. This is not the point of Kickstarter.
No, again, you're going to get something when you pledge. You get some sort of reward, so you're getting something out of it. Okay, and seriously, I wish all movies got their budget from Kickstarter. Then we, the people, would be able to vet and what will and will not be made. Let's abolish the old studio system that pumps out cookie-cutter dudgery and embrace the future where the playing field is level. We decide what comes out, not Warner Brothers.
Oh, I don't like that at all, Matt. Here we go. Because Kevin Smith recently came out when asked if he would use Kickstarter for Clerks 3. He said, and I quote, "I don't know. I feel like I should leave that for the cats that really need it at this point. Smith went on to say, I love the idea and I want to do it so desperately, but I think I've missed the window based on the fact that I do have access to materials, that I do have access to money. Kevin Smith gets it, Matt. Kickstarter is for people that have no other way to raise money but don't want to let their dream die. It's for people who care about a small film that they've worked hard on for years, spent every dollar they had already, and are sick of asking their parents for more funds. Those are the people I want to help. Those are the people Kickstarter is for.
Well, that's like your opinion, man.
Well, that's what this is all about, man. We're butting heads here on Kickstarter.
That was a dude quote. Go on.
All right, we throw it over to Frank. What did you think of this CinemaWar? And you've used Kickstarter.
Well, do I give you my verdict or my opinion?
Both.
Both.
In any specific order?
No, yeah. I mean, you got to pick a winner on whatever fact you think.
I hate to
so.
Say it, but it's Matt.
Oh. Yes!
Woo! So let's just get that out of the way.
Damn it.
As a guy Thank who's worked you. With wow. Kickstarter... It is my sole responsibility to create a great package, create great giveaways, involve people to make them feel like not only as part of the audience, but they're part of the production. We even offered on our Kickstarter at a certain price level that if you paid this much, you got to be in the series. So we have four people who paid a very large amount of money to come and act, never acted before. One guy is a general practitioner. He gives kids immunization shots and treats kids for colds all day long. And he was like, I wanted to scratch it off my bucket list in life. And he, you know, it was the, for him, it was like a ride to the moon, and he was overjoyed. So it was our job to go out and do that. I saw a great interview with Spike. I think it was on Bloomberg, and you can actually Google it up there because he gets hot. He gets livid with these people because they position it right off the bat from the beginning of the interview with how some people think this is controversial. And he's like, whose call is it controversial? What are you talking about? This is what I have to do because there's one word I'll give you, and it's tent poles. Okay, tent poles are the problem right now. You have to, if you're dealing with the studio, your script cannot be one standalone film. Okay, it's got to be a franchise that can be rolled into 3 to 6 to 9. And then at the same time, after that's done, we can do a reboot and a rehash and bring it back out 10 years later. Nothing wrong with that. Makes good business sense because they're trying to have the large scale vision in view. What gets lost is the independent films. So Spike's argument in this interview was, she hate me, you know what I mean? Films of, you know, the early films that I've done, those were all completely crowdfunded. It just wasn't through a website.
Mm-hmm.
It was my friends and my family and all these different people. And now his friends and family are not just, you know, the core people. His network has expanded.
Fans, sure.
Exactly. And I love what he said in there. He said, if my fans want this movie made, then help me get it made. If they don't, that's fine. I'll still go make Inside Man with Denzel Washington and Old Boy. He talked about that with Brolin. And those are studio-level films with high-caliber people. But he's talking about an independent film and an independent production where he wants the fans to basically have a voice and have a say. I don't feel like it harms me as an independent filmmaker. And if anything, it actually raises the awareness of Kickstarter to the general public, and more people might actually come to the table and say, well, what is this?
Yeah, but early
What's it
on,
do? How
but
can
as,
I get involved?
As Matt had mentioned,
yes.
I hate to keep going on with my point, but as Matt mentioned, yep. it opens up Pandora's box here. What if all of Hollywood starts going to it? Then all of a sudden, all people are funding are the Hollywood projects, and lost is the independent
Independents will find another way.
Yeah, I'm just saying, we're going to ruin it that way.
You know, there's Indiegogo out there at the same time, which I'm not a big fan of because Indiegogo does not say it's an all or nothing scenario. Indiegogo says, I want to raise 10 bucks, and if you only give me 2, I get to keep the 2. Well, as a filmmaker, for me, what are you going to do with the 2? Your goal was 10, so now you still got to go out and find 8, right? But the thing is, on Kickstarter, if my goal is 10 bucks and I don't get 10 bucks, I'm out of luck. So it gives us the drive to go and do it. And if the Hollywood studio system, which will never happen, immediately tomorrow went, hey, if you want to go see these movies, pay your tickets in advance, it's just not going to happen, right? They would go out of business because they'd have no locked-in revenue. And it's all, I mean, you know, there was great speeches. You know, my favorite was Soderbergh when he literally sat down, and I think it was at the San Francisco Film Festival, and he was like, there's no way that the independent cinema is going to thrive in the studio system anymore because it's right off the bat, here's your budget. Oh, by the way, here's another 30% just for marketing. And when we make a sequel, you'd think that, well, we've already made Wolverine, you know, 1 and 2. Everybody knows what it is. We don't need to spend more money this time. In fact, the studios want to double the amount. They want to double the amount of marketing and advertising. So you see it every 5 seconds on Spike TV or every 5 seconds on AMC.
Yeah.
And they're blasting posters everywhere, which get bigger and badder every single time because it has to always exceed, and nothing exceeds like excess. And that's the problem. So I think the indies will always do the thing. I don't think it hurts us. I think it actually helps exposure to what Kickstarter is.
Matt, you won this cinema war. It earns you 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever you want. Knock yourself out.
Man of Steel.
15 times in a row.
I'm done. Yep.
That's it.
That's it.
All right.
Priceless. Boom goes the dynamite.
Oh, boy, I love it. All right. Now, there's a new movie out. Ethan Hawke is starring in Getaway. So we are playing Ethan Hawke movie trivia.
Before we get there, I just want to say thank you for that win. That was... thank you.
You had it set against you, right? I don't know what to say. I mean, I've come from Kickstarter, so...
I know. Yeah. I knew I had it against
me. But there are people who share your view, just not me.
It's okay. And here's the thing, too. Matt is on a roll. Speaking of wins, 5, 6 in a row now? I don't know how many. It's something ridiculous.
I got a feeling Frank's going to beat me, man.
We are playing Ethan Hawke movie trivia. Frank, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals if the person doesn't know it. And if you get stuck on one, our engineer has clues to every question. You get one trip to the ER. Elias Rodriguez will help you out.
I'm not shy. Let's go.
Question number one?
Yep.
All right. Question number one in Ethan Hawke movie trivia, over to Frank. In this 2012 film, Ethan Hawke played a crime writer who moves into a house that just saw the previous family murdered there.
Sinister. You gave that to me, guys. I don't know what to say. You mentioned it earlier in the podcast.
I did,
what can I do?
1-0, Frank. It always starts off easy. Always starts off easy.
Good.
Question number two over to Matt Kay. In Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, two brothers plan to rob their parents' jewelry store. Which actor played Ethan Hawke's brother in the film?
That would be... I don't know.
Boy, you do have a trip to the ER. Or you can just throw out an actor's name.
Adrian Brody.
Wow. Chance for a steal here, Frank.
I have not seen the movie, but I've seen the trailer many times. It was on my list, and I'm going to make a shot. I don't even know if it's his brother. Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Wow.
Shot in the dark.
Phil Hoffman, yeah.
Phil Hoffman.
Shot in the dark.
It is 2-0, Frank. Question number three is over to him. He can blow it wide open right here. Ethan Hawke joined Nicolas Cage and Jared Leto in this 2005 film in which an arms dealer confronts the morality of his work.
Lord of War.
I was going to say Iron Man.
Wow.
Is that Iron Man?
Nick Cage is an Iron Man.
3-0, Frank. Matt, question four is over to you. In 1994's Reality Bites, Ethan Hawke is best friends and falling in love with Winona Ryder, but she starts to date a TV executive named Michael Greitz, played by what actor?
Every time you say another actor's name in the question, I'm like, oh, shit.
It messes you up.
Who played the other actor in Reality Bites?
Yeah, it was Ethan Hawke, Winona Ryder, and...
You actually spoke about him in this podcast.
You did.
I did?
You did.
You do have a trip
to the
ER.
Am I supposed to help him? I'm sorry.
No.
Supposed to throw the clues out there?
Fine, I'll go to the ER.
Whoa!
I got to get on the board here.
A trip to the ER, Elias Rodriguez. Who's the other actor in Reality Bites?
Your clue is... Museum guard.
Oh, Ben Stiller.
Boom. Well played.
He is on the board. Great clue, Elias. Yes, it is now 3-1. Frank's...
I knew that, too. I wasted my ER.
I have
pressure
an ER?
Has gotten to
All
me.
Right.
All right. It is 3-1, Frank. Question 5 is over to him. Ethan Hawke starred in this 1999 film as a newspaper man. He was a World War II veteran, mind you, covering a court case in which a Japanese-American is accused of killing a fisherman by the name of Carl Haney.
No idea. ER.
Whoa! A trip to the ER.
No idea.
Elias Rodriguez, what was the name of that 1999 film?
Your clue is Frozen Rain Falling on Trees.
Is the answer Frozen Rain Falling on Trees?
Close.
No, that's close to it, though.
Dang it.
Any guess?
No, that was my guess. I literally have no... I knew it had something to do with trees and pines, like snow falling on trees. No. Is it frost on trees? Dang it.
Matt, you got a chance for a steal here.
Frozen rain falling on trees? No, I didn't. That wasn't my answer.
That was the clue.
That was a question.
There was a question at the end. It kind of... Trees? It went up a little bit?
The snowy pines? Snowy something, right?
If you knew the title, you probably would have got it off the clue. It was Snow Falling on Cedars.
If we knew the title, we would need the clue.
Exactly.
Jesus, right?
Well, I thought it might, spark something.
Point to Elias.
All right. Question, that's Elias' fault. It's question 6. It is 3-1, Frank. Question 6 is over to Matt. Before Sunrise, the first film in the Before series, takes place in what European city?
Before Sunrise takes place in Gay Paris. Really?
No. Chance for a steal here, Frank.
So I don't have any more ERs?
No, you are.
Because that was my guess. This is awkward. All right, so it wasn't in Paris. It wasn't in Paris.
There's only three cities in Europe, really.
London. Yeah. It can't be in London because it didn't feel right. And Italy. So I'm going to say Italy.
That's not a city.
That's not a city. Sorry. It's got to be a city. It can't be. That's a country. Sorry. Rome?
No.
Rome was the last one. I know that.
No. That was Greece was the last one. Oh. We were looking for Vienna. Vienna.
Oh, you were right.
It's where the sausages come from.
Holy moly. It is still 3-1, Frank. Question 7 is over to Matt.
They make some good beef in Vienna.
Yeah.
Matt, in Gattaca, Ethan Hawke...
Oh, good movie.
...assumes the identity of Jerome Morrow, a man crippled by a car accident. He's using his DNA to pass screenings. Which actor played Jerome Morrow?
I've not seen this film.
A masterpiece, Frank.
It's phenomenal.
It is.
Right under the radar.
It's Mark Ruffalo.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for your time. Go ahead and sign off your checks.
It is 3-1, Frank.
I haven't seen it.
He did not know.
Jude Law looking good.
Jude Law.
And it's amazing how they make Ethan Hawke look like Jude Law.
4-1, Frank. This ball game is over, I tell
you. That was just sheer luck, though. I'm a Gattaca junkie.
If we had Jude Law movie trivia, I'd be rocking right
Boom.
Now. Except for that question, I would have got wrong.
We've stumped him.
Jude Law.
Question number 8.
something about trees.
Somehow we got tangled up here. Question number 8 over to Frank. Ethan Hawke teamed up with Richard Gere, Don Cheadle, and Wesley Snipes for this 2009 cop drama.
Oh, man. It's in New York, and it's got... And I don't have an ER, right?
No.
Brooklyn's Finest.
Wow.
The guy nailed it.
Wow.
Impressive.
I knew it was Brooklyn something.
5-1, Frank wins this one walking away. Matt's win streak is over, and I couldn't be happier.
Well done, sir. It had to be done,
Frank,
sooner or later.
In case it comes down to a tie, we call it a jawbreaker.
Let's do it.
This question would have went to you.
I'm excited.
All right. Better Ethan Hawke film, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead or Training Day?
I love Training Day.
That is incorrect.
Come on. I mean, I'm sure The Devil Knows You're Dead is good. I haven't seen it, but I think Training Day was what made Denzel's performance so great was his interaction in play with Hawke.
Right, Hawke, for sure. Yep. And here's the real jawbreaker. Age of Don Cheadle, closest to. Matt, you got a guess?
43 years old. Can I go 45? 45.
Elias, can you lock him in at 45?
I'm going 51.
It's 48.
Are we splitting the difference? Who's closer? I'm closer, right?
No, it's dead even.
Dead even? Oh, no fun.
We'd give that one to Frank.
Yeah,
well,
give
no,
it to the
I mean,
guest.
If it's dead even, it's dead even.
That's the first time
that
that's
goes
ever
out
happened.
Into the ether.
I swear.
Goes out into the ether.
But Frank wins this one walking away 5-1.
That's the first time that has ever happened on a Cinema Jaw that we were.
I think you should
absolutely.
We should look
difference.
Up the month and date and see who's closer.
I'm going August.
Oh, he was born in November. He was born in November.
You didn't let me guess.
Yeah,
sorry.
I was going to go October 4th. That's my birthday.
See, he was meant.
Oh,
to get it.
Oh, forget it.
That was it.
It would be different if it was an actual tie. Frank slaughtered you on this one, Matt.
It's okay.
First and foremost, we got to thank our guest. It's bringing us to the end of a great Jaw. Frank, again, for the Jawheads listening to this, where can they check out Black, the web series?
Right there, blackthewebseries.com. That will have links to all of the information. We've got some great merchandise on there, and we're going to push out a season 2 with the new Kickstarter campaign. So if people like it and they want to be a part of it, it's going to be bigger and better next time around. But right now, 6 episodes, all on YouTube, our YouTube channel. You can find directly from blackthewebseries.com. And we're independents, and we hope you like what we made for very little, and it looks great.
Thanks for coming on. Nice meeting you. We also got to thank our engineer, Elias Rodriguez, the best in the biz.
Thank you.
Thanks, Elias.
Thanks, Elias.
Also, thanks to our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to MoviePass.
Yes, unlimited movies in the theater for one low price. Check out MoviePass.com. When you check out, enter the code CinemaJaw and save $15 on your first month subscription.
And we thank them for their support.
And also the new 400 theaters. Matt, I tell you, it's always a blast.
Yeah, seriously, man. And Frank, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Congratulations on almost 4 years here doing the thing.
This is crazy.
We're getting there.
Yeah. Until next week, Jawheads, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.